Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Jack Watt on Jack Watts on Recovery, broadcasting to you live high above Atlanta, overlooking the majestic skyline of Buckhead. It is a magnificent day here today. Just a little bit muggy, but it is June in Atlanta. All right, everybody, as we are talking about recovery, we're talking about primarily recovery from religious abuse using the 11 steps to spiritual freedom that are part of the book that I wrote on recovering from religious abuse. To begin the show, I think that it's always good to go through the steps, which is what people do when they are in other recovery groups like AA, Al-Anon, and the rest. So I'm going to read the 11 steps to spiritual freedom. 1, I acknowledge that my life is shipwrecked and not where I want it to be. 2, I commit to stop living my life in pursuit of self-defeating behavior. 3, I accept that the responsibility for getting back on track is mine and no one else's. And our show today is going to focus on step 3. Step 4, I choose to believe what God says about himself, that he is good and can be trusted. I recognize that God is not the abuser, rather people who misuse their authority are the abusers. 5, I recognize that the only way back to a productive life is exactly the way I came. Therefore, I commit to repairing my relationship with God and making amends with everyone I have wronged along the way. 6, I refuse to become like those who have abused me and abandon my desire to spread malice because of my pain and my anger. 7, I will make a detailed written account of my abusive experiences as well as my subsequent behavior. I commit to being as thorough and honest as I am able. 8, I will share my experience and my own wrongdoing with a trusted friend, confessing the exact state of my heart. 9, I humbly ask God to change anything he wishes, and I ask him to heal my pain. Because God forgives us as we forgive others, I forgive my abusers. 10, I choose to believe God still has a purpose for my life, a purpose for good and not evil. I choose to commit, number 11, I choose to commit to nurture my relationship with the Lord, asking him to reveal his will to me and to provide me with the power to carry it out. Okay, as we are talking about the recovery element, all of this is also on my blog, Pushing Jesus, which I started 5 years ago. And I would write these lengthy entries, and there would be 2 people that would read them. It was just, it just didn't get any traction. And I thought to myself, why am I doing this? Why am I spending all this time? But I knew I was supposed to do it. And I just kept at it and at it and at it. Finally, Simon & Schuster published my book that's about recovering from religious abuse. And now on the Pushing Jesus blog, in the last 3 months alone, people from 65 different countries have read entries that I've written. Some of those countries, probably a dozen of them, are Muslim countries. So the people that are seeking help for the religious abuse that they've been suffering risk their lives, actually, to plug in and go on the internet and do this. All right. Now, today we're going to talk about embracing your brokenness. And I have a co-host Joni Ballou here with me. I'm going to read this entry, and then we're going to discuss what this is. And if anybody wants to call in, you can feel free to do so. And the number is 347-326-9949. This is Embracing Your Brokenness is something that is from step three. I accept the responsibility for getting back on track is mine and no one else's. You can't pass the buck about this. You can't say, well, you know, so-and-so did this to me, and I'm not going to do anything until they apologize. Well, guess what? They never will. For those who have become embittered by being broken and abused, resentment seems to consume them. They have a look of self-pity that acts like a force field, warning others to keep their distance. Such people act like joy sponges as they suck all of the happiness and energy out of the room. You know people like these, don't you? If you close your eyes, can you picture someone like this? Is there anything that would ever make you want to be like this? Of course not. Now, here's the good news. If you are like this or have ever been like this, you don't have to continue. You can stop feeding yourself pity. Nobody needs to provide you with consolation any longer, affirming how wronged you've been. Instead, you can change your perspective and be grateful for your experience. It begins by recognizing God has allowed you to be stripped of all of your pretentiousness. Now that you've bottomed out, you're ready to become everything you ever intended, that God is ready to make you everything he ever intended for you to be. With nothing to offer but yourself, you can bow your head and say, have mercy on me, Father, I am completely undone. When you say this and mean it, God will open his arms wide and the restoration process can begin. Until this happens, until you bottomed out, your problems will continue, perhaps even escalate. The choice is yours. You can begin healing just as soon as you reach bottom, or you can choose to wallow in your self-pity for another year or two or 20, pushing the people you love away. Which will it be? This entry, folks, is on the Pushing Jesus website, and it is open for everybody to take a look at. And now, let's discuss a little bit about what this really means. And I'm going to ask my co-host what she thinks. Joni, what do you think about this? And where is this? Tell me about the self-pity. Is that something that you have ever experienced?
Me, Austin?
Yes.
Well, I mean, every human has. We all have been acquainted with that emotion. You just have to be ever mindful of not giving over to a stronghold of self-pity. Right?
What exactly, when you say a stronghold of self-pity, what a stronghold? Explain to me what you're talking about, because the truth of the matter is, I think that you've hit it right on the nose right there when you're talking about a stronghold. Because when people get into self-pity and have this idea, I didn't do this, this was done to me, I'm a victim. Even if they say they're not a victim, they embrace victimhood to the extent that it becomes all-consuming. And those are the ones. I mean, when I say a joy sponge, you know what you're talking, what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah. Well, in keeping with the question about the victim, there's always that play on words, are you going to be a victim or a victor? And what I see, as you know, I've worked with child adolescent psychiatry, adult psychiatry, most of these people become patients because they choose the victim route, of course, instead of the victor route. And what happens is when we're children, our parents, our teachers, the people that we trust misguide us by saying, you're bad, you're a liar, you did this, you'll never be any better. And so it's not the original offense that's totally horrible. It's that repeated lie through life where we are told we're certain things that we're not. We're actually made in the image of God. We are loved by Him. He made us, and then He redeemed us from the fall. So we are beautiful treasures, and because no one comes along and cuddles up next to us and tells us this on a regular basis, as often as we hear the lies, that's where that stronghold starts. It's not the first offense, it's the repeated offense. And we build these strongholds up in our minds, and then because we don't ever hear the truth, we become victims. And the way out of that to become a victor is to know the truth that you're exposing, Jack, through your book, through your steps, through the scriptures. So that's why these discussions are so important, don't you think?
Actually, I do think that the I'm not just trying to push my book. Here's the thing. There are as many as 40 million people in America who are believers, who have abandoned their faith in the sense that they say because they've been wounded, because someone has used them, abused them, and then discarded them, they say, I don't want anything to do with that person. I don't want anything to do with Christianity. I don't want anything to do with you, God, because you let this happen to me. You should have done something. I was doing the right things, and you let this happen to me. So they are angry with God, and which is normal for once if somebody's gone through religious abuse. But when they don't deal with it, and they don't, it becomes hardened, and the stronghold that you were talking about, I like that concept, because what happens is they get in, it gets so firmly entrenched in them that it changes who they are, it changes their personality, it changes the way they deal with people, and they're miserable.
It's lie upon lie, like brick upon brick. And what you're saying, Jack, is it's important to point out in religious abuse who is the real driving force. It's Satan. And if Satan's mouth is moving, he's lying. And what happens is because of these lies that we're told from the beginning of our lives, we look at the person who lied to us, and if we take offense to the lie that was given through that person or the injustice or whatever said to us, if we are not equipped to handle that and have a right response, and we let bitterness set in or self-hatred or all the different principalities that go with these lies, then we open the door for the very spirit that's causing that person to operate so negatively, whether it's your husband or your parent. We open the door for that spirit to get a hold of us, and then we are a victim of that accusing spirit as well. And that, to me, is the way to look at religious abuse or victim mentality, is to take it back to the original liar, which is Satan, and look at what you need to do to combat those lies, which is usually true from the scriptures, most always.
Well, it's the Lord that heals people, but I brought up self-pity early in this program. This is just the second episode, And I brought it up because it's the thing that keeps people from reconnecting with the Lord more than anything else. And they feel just, the thing about self-pity is that you feel self-justified. You feel like, I have a right to this because I was a victim. And so they embrace this victim role, and it makes them, it pulls them away from everybody. And it becomes so strong inside them that they have a hard time breaking free of it because they don't see it. They were a victim, yes, that's true. But what they have to come to is that they are responsible for getting back on track, regardless if they were a victim or not. Because I, you know what? I can't tell you how many people I have talked to who have just said, I am willing to get back, you know, in my relationship with the Lord just as soon as Reverend so-and-so apologizes to me, just as soon as the church, you know, apologizes because they were wrong, I was not. And I tell them, okay, they were wrong, and you were right, but guess what? They're not going to apologize. They never apologize. When you go to churches, at the end, who are they after? The lost. How many times have you ever heard in a church say, you know what, today we're going to go after the people that we have discarded? They push them out the back door faster than they can get them in the front, and they keep looking. It's almost like spiritualmatch.com. They go after new stuff all the time and don't pay any attention to the people that they've used, abused, and discarded. And, of course, those are the people that we're trying to reach with Jack Watts on Recovery. So how these people get back in touch is the key. But to do that, they have to do step three, and that is recognize that getting back is their responsibility and no one else's.
The way that you implement that is to acquaint yourself with how much God loves you. How much God loves you. And if you know how much God loves you, then you are at the perfect place to equip yourself to do what Jack just laid out. Without that empowerment, all efforts are going to be self-effort. But what I'm realizing in my life, and what a lot of people are realizing in this generation, is for so long the churches taught us that we have to do something to get God's love. It was the grace message from Jesus was very contaminated with self-righteousness and how you have to do certain things to be worthy of God's love. And the truth of the matter is we are never more loved than we are today. We're not less loved today or more loved tomorrow. What he did on the cross took care of yesterday, today, and forever. And once you feel that love that he has for you, then you're able to receive the truth of his word. And you can see that the author behind this unholy alliance where, you know, the offense starts is Satan. And when you identify the real evil, then God equips you, because you are so loved, to have compassion for the person who actually offended you. And suddenly that need for you to be validated by that person and for them to come to you and apologize, it just loses that grasp on you. And all of a sudden you start feeling freer. And then you realize that once you get to that point, you're at that perfect place to abandon that victim mode and start moving more into that victor mode. where you have victory and you live the exchange life and you get out of that victim bondage?
Well, when here's my experience. When people are living in self-pity, victory is beyond them. They can't. That's kind of like saying Jack at 5'11 dunked the basketball. Here's how you do it. And teaching me the step. Well, I don't have the ability to get up that high to do it, and I never will again because I'm not a teenager. But I understand the concept, but I lack the ability. Now, when people are living in self-pity, they're not even to neutral. Their best days are consumed with apathy, bitterness, resentment, hostility. They don't know any joy. I mean, something good can happen and they'll have a good day, but their overall experience in life isn't anything like what they're supposed to be. It isn't what God's created them to be. And yet, they remain angry with Him because of this thing that happened to them that God should have intervened and stopped. I think one of the things that I always like to mention to people that have been abused is who can identify more with your abuse than Christ? He was innocent, completely innocent, just like people who've experienced religious abuse. Completely innocent, Christ. They arrested him. They spit on him. They swore at him. They stripped him naked, beat him, had a false trial, made him carry his cross, and they hung him on it. All the while, mocking and making fun of him, he was totally innocent. He was the Son of God. Now, none of us are the Son of God, obviously. But he can understand people who have been abused better than anyone else because he had that experience himself.
Exactly, Jack, and that's the whole point. How loving was he to have all of the Godhead crammed into a little baby? Isaiah speaks of how difficult that was for God to cram all of the Godhead into the flesh of a little baby so that he could, from the beginning of his existence, experience all of our fallen state, what we go through in this fallen world. And yet, he somehow maintained his innocence. He never succumbed to sin. But yet, he was acquainted in every way with all of our woes. And he did it out of love. And so, if you can get the person who is injured by something that has put them into self-pity or just that victim mode, and you can start getting a crack of understanding into that grid system of victimization of how much God loves them, that's the way out. That is the only way out that lasts.
Well, people who've been abused know they've been abused. And after they've lived like that for a while, they don't like it. They don't want to be there. They don't like looking at themselves in the morning. They don't like the self-defeating behavior that they've participated in after they have walked away because of the abuse. They don't like that they have gained 50 pounds because of, of comfort weight. They don't like that they're in debt because when they're depressed, they go out and they spend money. They don't like that they drink too much. They don't like that they watch pornography. They don't like that they have affairs. They don't like that they've been married and divorced numerous times. They don't like that they're raising their kids in a valueless society, and when they talk about any of the values that they once held, they don't have the conviction inside themselves of living that way, so they look to their kids like they're hypocrites, and it just makes it a complete mess. So there are people, and I know there are people out there like this. If you're listening today, if you're listening overseas, and you have been wounded in a church or by a religious leader, or even if it doesn't have anything to do with Christianity, even if it has to do with a spousal thing where, your husband does nothing but belittle you, or where if you're a woman and you just absolutely just cut the guy off at the knees all the time to where his self-worth is gone. The bitterness that comes from this, the victimization and the self-pity get so hard that it's a stronghold. You'd mentioned that it's a satanic stronghold. I suppose that's true. At the same time, it's also, for most people, an emotional stronghold. They are their own prisoners in their own minds, and they just can't get out of it.
Some people refer to that as a grid system. I know Dr. Charles Stanley uses the term grid system, and it's just the way your mind is arranged. When you hear something and your grid system is set up with victim mentality, you might hear something totally different than somebody else. So that's one way of looking at stronghold. It's just a grid system that causes you to hear things in a self-accusing way or in a victimization way. Going back to where you're talking about people that suffer from victimization or religious abuse, they don't like themselves, they might gain weight as a self-protective measure because they've not taken care of themselves, they don't feel like they deserve to weigh less or whatever. It's very important that we like ourselves. I mean, next to God, we should be our best friend. So, in essence, just loving yourself through the scriptures is where I was going to go with it, but I don't know if we have time to develop that.
Well, there is a way out of self-pity, and it begins with acknowledging that your life is shipwrecked, and then when you know that and say, I want to commit to not pursuing these self-defeating behaviors, and then accept that the responsibility for getting on back on track is yours and no one else. Once you start that, that is the way to begin it. Then we go to step four, which is that God is trustable, even though you think that he isn't based on your experience. And if you want help with this, you can either get the book, Recovering from Religious Abuse, 11 Steps to Freedom, or go to my blog, Pushing Jesus, and that's at jackwatts.me, www.jackwatts.me. Bless you and have a great day. Bye-bye.